To the afternoon session of this April 14th, 2015 Court of Appeals session. I'm Rico Bishop, and I'm pleased to be joined on my right by Judge Brett Imbody and on my left, Judge Mike Pirtle. We are being live streamed on NET, so to the extent there's anything sensitive or confidential in your case, be reminded of that. Also, when you come up, when your case is called, an appellant comes up, I'll have to repeat the case name for purposes of the recording. So let's go ahead and proceed. The first case is Lasu versus Isaac. You may approach. And again, this is the case Lasu versus Isaac.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Patrick McCormick, and I'm the attorney for Isaac. And I'm here before you today because I've appealed two decisions of the District Court of Douglas County. I took Isaac through a bench trial to determine his support amount, and one of the issues is whether the support amount is correct. And then I attempted to get Isaac in forma pauperis standing to come before the court, the appellate court. And that was denied. So those are the two main issues. The record in the case supports that Isaac is married and has 8 children in his home. So he's the head of a household of 10.
And then, are all 8 children minors?
Yes, sir. All 8 of them are minors. Then I suppose 6 of the children were born, and then 2 more are born, and simultaneously, 2 children are born with Lasu, if that makes sense.
Yes.
And Isaac and his wife have never divorced about it or anything. And the issue before the district court is what should Isaac's support be for the 2 children that he has with Lasu. Now, I raised the rule, it's Supreme Nebraska Court Rule 4218, and the essence of my appeal is right here in this rule. The first part of the rule is a parent's support, child care, and health care obligation shall not reduce his or her net income below the minimum of, and then it changes every year, it's $900 and something, right? And then net monthly for one person, and then here's the pivotal word, or the poverty guidelines updated annually in the Federal Register by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services under authority of 42 U.S.C. Section 9902, sub 2, except minimum support may be ordered as defined by Nebraska Court Rule 4209. So, the question I think that here is whether Isaac is one person for purposes of determining his support, or if we need to go look at the federal poverty guidelines to see, as head of household of 10, and then what's his total family income, and proceed from there.
Are there any Nebraska appellate cases that address that or
no
language?
No, Your Honor.
So you're asking us to interpret that language to suggest that we look at the table when there's more than one person in the household?
Yes, indeed. I think that it turns on whether or not the or. And that I wrote in my brief that I didn't know if this was, if I was appealing the district court's opinion as an abuse of discretion, because is it discretionary to go to the one side of the or the other, or is it a plain error? Since I've established that Isaac is the head of household of 10, him and his wife's tax records are on, they're in this case, they're available, and we're below the federal poverty guidelines for 10 people with this, him and his wife's income. So,
did you present evidence to the trial court with regard to how that would affect the calculations for your client, the application of the poverty guidelines for a family of 10? How that would affect the judge's calculations?
Yeah, it's all over the place in the record.
Did you provide a calculation for the judge to rely upon in making that application?
Yes, I did.
So the child support calculation worksheet in evidence that you put into evidence reflects the application of the language you're talking about?
Well, it would lead to us to go look at the federal rule or federal 24 U.S.C. 99022, and then it would lead to a determination that under Nebraska Court Rule 4209, which provides as recommended that even in the low-income cases, a minimum support of $50 or 10% of the obligor's net income, whichever is greater per month, be set. This will help to maintain information on such obligor, such as his or her address, employment, etc. Hopefully encourage person to understand necessity, duty, importance of supporting his or her children. I argued this calculus all the way through the whole.
Didn't your child support worksheet indicate child support owed by Mr. Isaac, like $91 or something to that effect?
Something like that. What happens is that I use the Nebraska child support calculator and plug in the fields, and it generates a calculation. I think that the Nebraska calculator takes Rule 4218 into account for purposes of one person, and it doesn't have a place to fill in that he's head of a household of 10. So by putting the information in and push and calculate, then my printer spit out these pieces of paper that had something like $91 on it.
So what did you propose that the child support be for these two children?
Well, it would be $50 per child.
And that wouldn't be 10% of his gross income.
It could be that too, because the rule says either or. I think that you come out with more money with $50 a child. But it certainly isn't 617. And then that 617 shifts $7,000 more away from this family of 10, who's already below the federal poverty guideline.
But in this family, you have two income earners, where in the other family, you have only one income earner. So how is that fair?
Well, Judge, back in the old days, there was a district court referee that named Pat Cullen, who's since deceased.
Right.
And when I get in front of Mr. Cullen with these kinds of cases that are poverty, he'd take one look at it and see that everybody is on some sort of state aid. And then it's a matter of the record here that everybody is on some sort of state aid. And he would say something to the extent that the state of Nebraska has already made a determination that all of these people are in poverty. Who am I to adjust that? And then do the $50 or 10% under Nebraska Court Rule 4209. At any rate, the second part of it is that I tried to get Isaac in form of pauperous status, and the district court wrote that I didn't reach my burden, or use some pretty flowery language about it. I had Isaac on the stand. He said, I have $60 in the bank. I don't know how I'm going to pay my utility bill. And the district court quoted the Sunshine case in its opinion. In that case, it says that the court should be looking at everything that's in front of it. And we had just had a trial where we had stipulations as to Isaac has 8 children and a wife. He's a head of household of 10. They receive food stamps and so forth because the state has argued, determined that they're in poverty. Did I get interrupted?
You have 2 minutes left.
Oh, okay. Anyway, I think that he's manifestly impoverished, and I don't know how he'd access to justice if I wouldn't have passed a hat around to get the money to thank you.
You didn't appeal that, though, did you?
Pardon me, sir?
You didn't appeal that determination, did you?
Yes, I did.
You appealed it after the filing fee had been paid by your client.
Well, the filing fee was paid. He didn't pay it.
Somebody paid it.
Somebody did pay it.
Well, in other words, the order was entered on paternity and child support, and then the request was made to proceed IFP on appeal, which was not decided until June 16th, into the next month, right?
Right, and that was more than a month from the...
Right, and so was there an appeal taken from the denial of IFP?
They came right at the same time.
So do you understand that by statute they have to be separate?
Yes, I do. I worried that we would still be working on the IFP appeal, and another year would go by before I got this appeal, and then the Isaac household would still be paying $617 a month all the way, and it'd be 2 years out. What's the purpose of that?
Okay, I'm still having problems. After the court determined that your client did not qualify for IFP status, you have a choice. You either stand on that and appeal that decision to our court, or you pay the filing fee. Somebody paid the filing fee. So isn't the issue moot now as to whether or not the court was wrong in denying IFP?
If that's the rule, then I suppose that it is, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court? Counsel? My name is Kyle Allen, and I'm appearing on behalf of Murad Lassou, the appellee in this action, the plaintiff in the underlying district court action. I would like to thank you for granting oral arguments today, as this is an important matter that affects, as you know, 16 children, two of which are specifically the subject of this action. For the purposes of my argument today, it's my intention to argue the assignment of errors correctly assigned by the appellant. In sum, for the sake of simplicity, those being, number one, the district court abused its discretion in finding that Mr. Isaac's support amount obligation was $613 per month. And number two, the district court abused its discretion in denying Mr. Isaac's application to proceed in forma pauperis.
Is it your position that our standard of review is abuse of discretion on both issues?
Yes, Your Honor. As the court knows, Mr. Isaac has eight other children, and there are 16 children between the families. Mr. Isaac, in his brief on page 5, quotes Justice Seaver's concurring opinion in Krauss v. Krauss, and he states, and I quote, "The appropriate language and rule is that the problems presented in such cases require an interdependent consideration by the trial court of the parent's obligations to the children of his or her now dissolved marriage and the children resulting from a subsequent marriage so that both families are treated as fairly as possible," end quote. To be clear, appellant is arguing that both families should be treated as fairly as possible. At issue today is whether that happened.
Can I stop you there? Because
yes,
really this sort of hinges on the trial court's use of your proposed child support calculation, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And in that calculation, you gave a credit to Mr. Isaac of only $318 per month for his other eight children, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And yet it then provided for $618 of support for two children, right? How is that equitable?
Your Honor, thank you for the question. And if I may address...
You used a joint physical custody calculator, as I recall.
I did,
to get to that number, right? Assuming Mr. Isaac were to divorce his current wife, and using a joint physical custody calculator, you came up with that $318, right?
Yes, and at no time during the trial, it was all stipulated to that the parties were to remain married, that they both had jobs, and their incomes were stipulated to. And so what we did is we calculated the figure, a joint custody calculator, with eight children. The first step between Mr. Isaac and his current wife, the calculator doesn't support past six children, so that was the number. The 318 figure is where we arrived at that.
But isn't there a requirement under the joint physical custody calculation that you also include costs for other expenses associated with the children, like clothing or extracurricular activities? The low monthly amount of child support is in consideration for the parties also sharing then in other costs. Were those factored into your calculation?
Your Honor, those were not provided at any time through evidence or testimony, and so those were not included.
Okay. Is it your position that the other side has the burden of putting those costs in for them to be considered by the court?
I believe it would be, Your Honor. our position is that the court has treated both families fairly in adopting Exhibit 16.
Let's stop there for just a second. I have problems with you saying that the court should treat them, both families, fairly when you say that you're only considering that there's 6 children in his married life when there's actually 8. So right at the beginning of your calculations, you're not treating 2 children fairly. What do we do with those 2 children?
Your Honor, and I believe that the child support guidelines do factor in the poverty guidelines, and that's a great question, but it's my understanding that they
were... As you said, it only went to 6. It only takes you out to 6 children when you do your calculation.
If you... I don't have Exhibit 16 in front of me, but the calculation did show at the 6th child, $318 in support.
But there's 8. So you got 2 more.
You were limited by the income shares table, right? It just doesn't provide for more than 6 children, which is a problem to begin with.
So that's the problem of being equitable, true? But the form in of itself, when you have 8 children and it only goes to 6, creates an inequitable situation. Yes? No?
Well, she doesn't want to agree with that, right?
I don't, with all due respect.
All right.
So the first issue is Mr. Isaac impoverished. We learned from Fine v. Fine that courts must make specific findings of fact that establish the expected fees and costs of the ability of the appellant to pay those costs within the time required before denying the appellant in form of papyrus.
Okay, you've gone to that second other issue. Can we just stay on the child support issue for another minute?
Sure.
What's your position with regard to the language that Mr. McCormick is raising in 218, I'm sorry, with regard to the basic subsistence level of 973 relevant to your case is the net monthly for one person, and then it has that phrase, or the poverty guidelines updated annually, et cetera, in the Federal Register. Do we just ignore that second phrase in the rule?
Your Honor, I read that as the or would be the 981 changes, not the one person. And I think Mr. McCormick is arguing that the amount of people.
Is that equitable then for a man who's supporting 10 people that we're applying a basic subsistence level that would normally be applied to just one person?
Your Honor, I feel that this is equitable, and there are 2 people in that household. Their combined incomes are supporting the 8 children.
But in this case, even the combined income of Mr. Isaac and his wife, if we were to apply the guidelines set forth in the Federal Register for a family of 10, even combining the incomes, they're below the basic subsistence level.
And Your Honor, I believe that the child support guidelines accounted for that in the first step on the first worksheet in our calculation.
How did it do that?
Well, when at a joint custodial arrangement, it did account for the poverty guidelines, and that's computed within the calculate.
But that was also based on the premise of joint physical custody. What if Mr. Isaac was divorced and it was basic sole custody to the wife?
You're right, Your Honor. That would change. That would change that. But at the time of trial, they were married, living together. There was no indication. There was no divorce, dissolution action on file, and that would be better suited down the road for some sort of modification. If that were the case, if they did divorce and she was granted sole custody and he was paying the support amount.
So are you saying that the trial court, in its discretion, can choose how to calculate that credit for those other 8 children, but relying on your joint physical calculator versus what Mr. Isaac proposed?
Yes, I think the trial court does have it in their discretion.
Okay.
Thank you. I would like to discuss Mr. Isaac's motion to proceed in form of papyrus. And again, we learned from Fine v. Fine that the trial court may deny an informal papyrus status to an appellant on either 2 grounds, when the appellant is in fact able to pay the cost, or when the appeal is frivolous and not taken in good faith. The trial court heard the evidence. There was no evidence offered, not even his own affidavit, and he provided no additional testimony as to why he couldn't pay the cost. In fact, there was testimony that he hadn't even investigated the cost at that hearing. I actually provided the information to the district court because I had investigated what costs he was requesting the Nebraska taxpayers to borne.
Do you think that issue's in front of us?
Your Honor, I thought that I should address it. If the court decides that it's not, then I would agree that.
You won't argue about it?
I won't.
She's pretty easy to get along with.
And again, just briefly to touch on the child support calculation that we proposed, the first step did take into account the federal poverty guidelines, and then we took that figure and utilized that figure in Section 2E on the support calculation as between Mr. Isaac and Ms. LeSue.
But you do agree that your joint calculation did not include consideration of other expenses associated with the children that would normally be included in a joint calculator?
I'm not familiar what exact expenses you're stating, but again,
in the rule itself, to use the joint physical calculator, it also indicates that the expenses of the children, like clothing and extracurricular costs, shall be shared by the parties.
In respective proportion?
Yes.
Correct.
Which that didn't happen in this case.
And Your Honor, in this case, at the time the children weren't receiving, they were receiving some assistance for daycare, and I believe that they're on Medicaid, and so there wasn't that cost at the time of trial. And so I respectfully would just ask that you affirm the district court's decision, and who's actually going to be impoverished if you...
You can go ahead and finish.
Oh.
You can finish.
If you give Mr. Isaac the relief he requests, by his own decision, he's fathered 10 children. What he wants you to do, in our opinion, is impoverish the 2 children born outside the marriage. Thank you.
Thank you. Does Mr. McCormick have any rebuttal time left?
He has 8 seconds.
8 seconds.
I have a question for you, so you can use the 8 seconds.
8 seconds. Yes, sir.
There's 2 children. If we would calculate out what we think is the appropriate amount for 2 children for support, do you think we'd have to leave that for the question as to what the amount would be as to 1 to a later date because of all the fluctuation in the number of kids that are involved here?
I don't know that I understand the question.
Well, generally, when you do set child support, you set for 2, and then you say what it is if there's 1. In this case, we've got a lot of kids. It seems to me that those figures will really vary if there's a reduction from 2 to 1. There could be something happening on the other side, too.
My thought would be that since there are 6 children born before Isaac and his wife had 2 more, which simultaneously Isaac and LaSalle had 2 more, then if we're waiting for the 6 to time out to see how it affects the other 2,
no,
and then do we want to...
You'd have only 1. I'm talking about, and you're sitting, you have 2 here, we have 2 kids here. If something would happen to one of them, let's say 2 years from now, then there'd only be support for 1.
But,
do you need to go back to court to calculate what that is again, or would it simply stay the same?
Well, what I'm asking for a court to do is to either do 10% of Isaac's net income or $50 to a kid.
Okay, so you didn't understand my question. Thank you very much. You're out of time.
I'm sorry. I just didn't understand.
That's all right. Thank you both very much. The case is submitted. Thank you. All right, our next case is Gones versus Department of Administrative Services.